It usually happens on a Tuesday night. You're sitting on your couch, you've got the windows open because it's late June, and you have that distinct, like, perfect breeze coming off Lake Michigan, just filtering through the screens.
Oh, yeah, it's the best time of year there.
It really is. You're probably digesting some world-class Italian beef, or maybe you're just, anticipating a weekend neighborhood block party. And in that moment, you genuinely love Chicago.
Right, because the energy is just incredible.
Exactly. The distinct character of the neighborhoods, the unbeatable food scene, that absolute electric energy of a Midwest summer. It is, I mean, objectively incredible. But
And then you look at the kitchen counter.
yes, your eyes drift over to the kitchen counter. And sitting right there is the mail you pulled from the box earlier, specifically that thick, slightly oversized, incredibly ominous envelope from the Cook County Assessor's office.
Yeah, that envelope. It has a very specific, almost psychological weight to it. It's not just a piece of mail. It really represents a fundamental shift in your financial reality for the next year.
It feels physically heavier than the electric bill, right?
Right.
And almost like a reflex, you don't even open it right away. You pull out your phone, you open a new tab, and you just start looking at Zillow.
Oh, everybody does it.
And you're not looking for a slightly smaller house in the suburbs. You're not looking for a vacation place across the border in Michigan. You start looking completely across the country at the Pacific
Like
Northwest.
you're looking at the mountains.
You look at the water, and you start doing this secret, quiet math in your head.
It's the arithmetic of leaving. And what I find so compelling about this is how completely universal that exact scenario has become for a certain demographic of Midwestern homeowners.
Yeah, definitely.
Because there is this massive assumption in our culture that when a family packs up and moves 2,000 miles away across three time zones, it's because they're fleeing a place they absolutely despise, like they're running away from ruin.
Like it's a desperation move.
Exactly. But that's simply not what the data shows, and it is entirely contrary to what our source material for this deep dive actually reveals.
Okay, well, let's unpack this source material because today we are looking at something incredibly specific and honestly almost uncomfortably candid. We have our hands on a hyper-detailed document literally titled The Relocation Guide and Cost Math.
It's a fascinating read.
It really is. It was written by Gennaro Schaefer, who is an 11-year real estate broker operating out of Bellingham, Washington. He holds Washington license number 27119, boasts over 67 closings, and has essentially built an entire cottage industry around this one exact pipeline.
The Chicago to Washington pipeline.
Exactly. Extracting people from the financial ecosystem of Chicago, specifically Cook County, DuPage, Lake, or Will counties, and landing them in the damp, mountainous terrain of the Pacific Northwest.
And the central thesis of Schaefer's guide is what makes it so fascinating. He argues, and he backs this up with highly aggressive spreadsheets.
Oh, the spreadsheets are intense.
They are. But he argues that Chicagoans aren't leaving because they hate Chicago. They actually mourn the loss of the city. But they are making a highly strategic, purely mathematical decision to escape a very specific financial and climate-based grind.
So it's not an emotional escape.
No, not at all. It is a calculated reallocation of their personal resources. They're looking at their life as an enterprise and basically deciding, the overhead is just too high.
So the mission of this deep dive is to completely bypass the typical real estate marketing hype. We aren't going to talk about, finding your dream home. We are going to look exclusively at the cold, hard
What are
arithmetic,
the actual numbers?
the actual numbers. We're going to examine the literal meteorological trade-offs because they're severe, let me tell you, and the logistical reality of moving exactly 2,100 miles away.
Right.
We are moving from the emotional weight of loving a city to the crushing financial weight of trying to stay in it.
Well said.
Let's start with the money, because as much as people talk about wanting to hike mountains or, paddleboard in the ocean, the spine of this entire relocation is a tax equation.
It really is. And so let's look at the largest variable in that equation first, which is the state income tax. In Illinois, the state currently charges a flat 4.95% income tax on every single dollar of taxable income.
Right, it's a flat tax.
Exactly, meaning there are no progressive brackets where your first chunk of money is taxed at a lower rate, and there's no top-out limit where the tax drops off. Whether you make $50,000 or $5 million, nearly 5 cents of every single dollar goes directly to Springfield.
So I'm losing basically 5 cents on every dollar in Illinois. But Washington is one of those rare zero income tax states, right? Which means the math must shift dramatically the second you cross the state line.
Oh, it completely rewrites your household budget. Washington State charges 0% personal income tax. And the history behind this is actually quite interesting. Washington's Constitution has these strict uniformity clauses that have repeatedly struck down attempts to implement a graduated income tax over the last century.
So they just don't have one at all.
Right. They rely heavily on sales and property taxes instead. But practically, for the relocating family, the immediate impact is massive. Let's take a hypothetical, a dual-income household earning $150,000 a year.
Okay, pretty standard for a professional couple.
Yeah. In Illinois, that 4.95% flat tax equals roughly $7,400. The day you establish residency in Washington, you stop paying that entirely.
Just boom, gone.
Gone. You are keeping $7,400 that you used to send to the state every single year, forever.
Wait, hold on. You're telling me this move is basically like walking into your boss's office and getting a nearly five-figure raise without actually doing any extra work? I mean, there has to be a catch. Because I'm looking at this and thinking, the West Coast is universally more expensive. Like, milk must be $10 a gallon out there to make up for the lack of income tax.
Yeah, that is the assumption everyone makes, and it's a completely logical one. We naturally assume geographic beauty and coastal proximity automatically require a universally higher cost of living. But the tax structure in Washington fundamentally alters the baseline of your wealth accumulation.
Okay, but there are catches.
Yes. However, before we get to the cost of living caveats, because you're right, there are absolutely catches, we have to talk about the other half of the tax equation, because that envelope sitting on the kitchen counter isn't an income tax bill.
Ah, yes. It's the property tax assessment. The trigger. The thing that actually makes you open the Zillow tab in the first place.
Exactly. And this is where the arithmetic heavily, overwhelmingly favors the exit strategy. Cook County's effective property tax rates are notoriously brutal. The median effective rate is over 2% of the home's value, and in many south suburbs, it climbs significantly higher.
Way higher, yeah.
But Schaffer points out in the guide that it isn't just the high baseline rate that destroys a homeowner's peace of mind. It's the systemic volatility.
The unpredictability of it.
Precisely. The guide highlights a recent city tax year where the median residential bill saw a brutal 16.7% jump.
Oh my God, 16.7% in 1 year.
In 1 year. And when we talk about the mechanics of this, what it actually means is that your monthly escrow payment to your mortgage company suddenly skyrockets by hundreds of dollars with virtually no warning, simply because the county decided your neighborhood is suddenly worth more on paper.
You cannot budget for a 16.7% jump in a fixed housing cost. It's just impossible.
It is. And that introduces what economists call the ratchet effect. It's this this psychological toll where homeowners feel like the bill only ever goes up. It goes up unpredictably, and they have absolutely no control over it. It breaks the fundamental trust between the citizen and the municipality.
You start to feel like you don't actually own your home.
Exactly. You feel like you're just perpetually renting your own property from the county assessor. Now, contrast that mechanism with Whatcom County, where Bellingham is located.
Okay, let's run the numbers. What does a Whatcom County tax bill actually look like?
Their effective property tax rate runs about 0.70% to 0.77%.
Yeah, well, less than a percent.
Less than a percent. And the Washington levy structure is strictly capped by state law. Local taxing districts generally cannot increase their regular property tax levy rate by more than 1% per year without going directly to the voters.
Which creates immense financial predictability. You actually know you're going to pay.
Exactly. So let's take a hypothetical $500,000 home. In Cook County, at that 2% or higher effective rate, you're paying somewhere between $8,300 and $10,700 a year just for the privilege of the property sitting there.
And that exact same $500,000 valuation in Bellingham.
In Bellingham, at that 0.77% rate, the annual tax bill is roughly $3,500 to $3,850.
That's insane.
You are instantly saving up to $6,500 annually on property taxes alone, on top of the income tax saving.
Okay, so if I'm tracking this on my spreadsheet, I've got $7,400 saved on state income tax, plus a conservative $6,500 saved on property tax. We are looking at nearly $13,900 of retained wealth every single year.
Every year.
And we haven't even talked about sales tax, which in Chicago is like completely infamous. It's a combined 10.25% in the city. Every time you buy a coffee, a television, a car.
Right. And Bellingham's combined sales tax is around 8.8%. The guide uses the example of buying a $40,000 car. In Bellingham, you're saving about $580 right at the dealership signing table, not to mention the nickel and dime daily savings on regular consumer spending.
So it all adds up.
It adds up fast when you aggregate this the property and income tax savings on a household making $150,000. Schaffer's guide conservatively calculates that $12,900 a year stays entirely in your pocket.
That is discretionary income that was previously just, you know, spoken for.
Let's look at the long-term mechanism of that. Over a 20-year horizon, if you just put that $12,900 a year into a checking account yielding nothing, you've kept $258,000.
Quarter of $1 million.
But if you take that newly freed capital and invest it annually at a historical 7% market return, the compounding interest pushes that figure well into the high six figures.
Wow. Oh, okay, but we have to be totally honest with the listener here, because this isn't some magical financial utopia where everything is cheap. Let's look at the other side of the ledger. What gets more expensive when you leave the Midwest for the Pacific Northwest?
The most immediate and painful friction point is transportation. Washington's gas taxes are among the highest in the nation to fund their infrastructure. And the logistics of West Coast oil refining and distribution, they push pump prices significantly higher.
How much higher are we talking?
Well, the guide notes that in early June 2026, the Illinois average was roughly $4.69 a gallon. In Washington, it was $5.67.
Oh, man. That is a full dollar more per gallon. If you're driving a crossover or an SUV, you're going to feel a very distinct pinch every single time you stand at the pump.
You absolutely will. Groceries, interestingly enough, are essentially a wash. Chicago's grocery pricing is historically about 3.5 to 3.8% above the national average, and Bellingham hovers right around that same national average mark.
Okay, so groceries are fine. What about going out?
Dining out is another place the math shifts against you. Washington has a much higher state minimum wage than the national standard. And unlike many states, Washington does not have a tip credit.
Right. Meaning restaurants have to pay their servers the full state minimum wage before tips. Whereas in Illinois, there's a sub-minimum wage for tipped workers.
Correct. That labor cost mechanism forces Bellingham restaurant owners to bake those wages directly into the menu prices. So a basic burger and a beer out on a Tuesday night is going to cost noticeably more than it would at a neighborhood tavern in Chicago.
That makes sense.
And then we have to talk about the ultimate hidden fee in Washington state real estate, which is the real estate excise tax, or REIT.
Right, because the state has to get its revenue from somewhere if there's no income tax.
Yeah.
How does REIT actually work?
It functions as a back-end toll. Washington charges a graduated excise tax to the seller when a property changes hands. It ranges from 1.1% on the lower end, scaling up to 3.0% on the portion of the sale price over $3 million.
Okay, so you pay when you leave.
Exactly. Illinois has municipal and county transfer taxes, certainly, but Washington's REIT bite is generally much larger upon the eventual sale. The mechanism here is delayed taxation. If you move to Bellingham, you're shielding your daily income and your annual property wealth massively while you live there, but you accept the contract that you will pay a significant toll when it is time to sell that house and leave the state.
Okay, so we've established the tax stack. You have this extra $12,900 a year burning a hole in your pocket, but here's the catch. You essentially have to spend it.
Yeah, you do.
Because since we just established you have this extra cash flow, let's look at how far your Chicago home equity actually goes when you land in the Bellingham market. And spoiler alert, it doesn't go as far as you think.
This is the crux of the relocation challenge, really. And it's where the math gets highly individualized based on exactly which part of the Chicago area you're fleeing.
Right.
We need to look at the market data medians from the second quarter of 2026. The median sale price for a home in the city of Chicago was about $420,000. If you pull back to look at Cook County overall, it was roughly $389,000.
Okay, so around 400 grand.
Yeah. Now, if you are out in the more affluent suburban rings, say, the North Shore up by Evanston and Wilmette, or out west in DuPage County, a typical single-family home was running between $500,000 and $650,000.
And what does a typical single-family home cost in Bellingham?
The median in Bellingham is roughly $650,000, frequently fluctuating between $640,000 and $700,000 depending on inventory. And you also have to factor in buyer closing costs, which generally run around 1.5% of the purchase price or about $10,000 out of pocket.
See, here's where it gets really interesting to me. Because if you are sitting in a Chicago neighborhood where your house is worth $420,000 and you look at Zillow and see the Bellingham median is $650,000, your immediate reaction is, I am priced out. I can't afford a $230,000 housing upgrade.
Of course, that's the natural reaction.
But the guide argues that housing in Bellingham is not functionally cheaper. yet it is mathematically more affordable. It's the zero-income tax combined with property taxes that are literally cut in half that makes a more expensive purchase price completely viable on a monthly basis.
That is the essential mechanism that brokers like Schuffer have to teach their clients. It requires rewiring how you view a mortgage. Most people view affordability purely through the lens of the raw purchase price. But this strategy relies on monthly cash flow.
So how does it actually play out?
Let's walk through the gap math to see how this practically works for a relocating family. Let's say you're selling a typical North Shore home. You sell it for $600,000. You pay off your remaining mortgage, cover your 6% closing and agent costs, and you walk away netting $525,000 in cash.
Okay, nice little nest egg.
Right. To buy that $650,000 Bellingham median home, you have a $125,000 gap.
Which honestly doesn't sound too bad. How do you bridge it?
With $525,000 cash in hand, you take $162,500 and put down a 25% down payment on the Bellingham home. You finance the remaining $362,000 with a mortgage. You still have hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank from your Chicago sale, and you're only financing a little over $300,000.
Wow.
Given that your household no longer pays state income tax and your property tax just dropped by $6,000 a year, servicing a $362,000 mortgage is incredibly comfortable. It feels like a massive financial relief.
But what if you aren't coming from the wealthy North Shore? I mean, what if you're coming from the city proper? Let's say you sell a nice condo in Lakeview or a modest detached house in Portage Park. And after paying off your loan, you net $395,000. Now your gap to the Bellingham median is $255,000. That is a much steeper climb.
It is steeper, but the mechanism still functions. In that scenario, you use $130,000 of your cash to put 20% down, avoiding private mortgage insurance. You are now financing $520,000.
That's a bigger monthly payment.
It is a heftier monthly payment, but again, the newly freed monthly cash flow from the lack of taxation absorbs much of the shock. Alternatively, the guide emphasizes that buyers in this tier don't have to target the median. They can target Bellingham's $500,000 to $575,000 tier.
Does that tier actually exist?
That tier absolutely exists, but it requires compromise. You might be buying a smaller footprint, an older build, or you might be looking a bit further out into the county.
But there is a group that essentially breaks the math entirely, right? The broker calls it the jackpot scenario.
Oh, yes. The longtime owners who have written decades of appreciation. Consider someone who bought a classic brick two-flat in Lincoln Park or a massive colonial in Naperville 20 years ago. They have paid down their principal and watched the market swell.
So they're sitting on a ton of equity.
They might be sitting on $400,000 to $600,000 in raw, unencumbered equity. When that seller lands in Bellingham, they don't even bother bridging a gap. They frequently buy a $600,000 house entirely in cash.
Imagine the psychological weight lifting off your shoulders.
Yeah.
You drop your equity onto a house in Washington. You completely wipe out your mortgage. You never write an Illinois income tax check again. And your property tax is less than $4,000 a year.
Schaefer refers to this mechanism as cashing out and breathing. This specific demographic is fascinating because they aren't moving to Washington to upgrade to a sprawling mega mansion.
Right. It's not about showing off.
No, they're engaging in a highly deliberate wealth-shifting strategy. They are moving their accumulated wealth away from paying punitive annual county taxes and shifting it into building personal protected equity in a low-tax state. It's a defensive financial maneuver disguised as a lifestyle upgrade.
Okay, speaking of lifestyle upgrades, we've established the financial warmth of Bellingham. We've proven the math works on the spreadsheet. But we need to put the spreadsheet away for a second and talk about the literal meteorological chill.
Ah, the weather.
Because we have to look at the honest trade-off you make when you leave the Midwest for the Pacific Northwest. Because no amount of tax savings matters if you are utterly miserable 9 months out of the year.
The weather transition is profound because you are trading one extreme for another. They just manifest in completely different ways. Let's start with the baseline of what the listener is trying to leave, which is the Chicago winter grind.
The grind. It's almost a badge of honor. I mean, anyone listening who has lived through a true Chicago winter knows it in their bones. You are looking at average low temperatures in January hovering around 17 to 23 degrees Fahrenheit, frequently dropping to 14 degrees.
That's brutal.
You're dealing with an average of 37 inches of snow a year. You have those unpredictable, hyper-localized lake effect snow bands that just dump 4 inches of powder on your morning commute while the next town over gets nothing.
And we cannot understate the physiological and infrastructural impact of the polar vortex.
Oh, the polar vortex. Don't remind me.
This isn't just cold weather. These are multi-day stretches where the actual air temperature, before factoring in wind chill, plunges below zero. The mechanism of wind chill at that temperature means it physically hurts exposed skin within minutes. It hurts to breathe deeply.
Yeah, your eyelashes freeze.
Exactly. And there are massive hidden financial and labor costs associated with this climate. It's the $400 snowblower repair because the carburetor clogged. It's signing seasonal plowing contracts for your driveway. It's the sheer utility cost of forcing a furnace to combat single-digit temperatures for four consecutive months.
And then just when you survive that and you think you've earned a perfect summer, late July hits, and you get 82 to 84 degree averages, but with that heavy, sticky, suffocating humidity rolling off the lake that makes you sweat just standing still.
Right. Now, compare the mechanics of that climate to Bellingham's reality. Bellingham winters are, from a temperature perspective, remarkably mild. The city averages only 8 to 12 inches of snow a year.
To a fraction of Chicago.
A tiny fraction. And more importantly, because the ground rarely stays frozen for long, that snow typically melts within a few days. Temperatures rarely drop below the high 20s. The polar vortex simply does not exist there because the Cascade Mountains shield the coast from the Arctic continental air masses.
So it's not freezing.
But there is the gray.
The gray. This is where I have to use an analogy to really make sense of it. Because choosing between a Chicago winter and a Bellingham winter feels like choosing between a high-intensity sprint and a grueling marathon.
I like that analogy.
Right. Chicago is the sprint. It requires sudden, extreme bursts of effort. You are outside violently shoveling snow. You are sprinting to your car to escape the wind chill. It's brutal. It demands everything you have, but the next day the sky might clear up and you have this blindingly bright, beautiful sunshine reflecting off the snow.
And Bellingham is the marathon.
Yes. It doesn't require violent effort, but it demands relentless psychological endurance. The guide is incredibly honest here. Bellingham endures roughly 230 overcast or gray days a year.
That is a staggering metric for someone accustomed to bright, freezing Midwest days. We aren't talking about torrential cinematic thunderstorms. We are talking about 36 inches of light, persistent, misty rain spread uniformly over 9 or 10 months. It acts as an atmospheric blanket that traps the moisture and blocks the sun.
Can a Midwesterner used to that bright, freezing sun really handle 230 days of clouds? Because to me, that sounds mentally exhausting in a totally different way. You might not be shoveling snow, but you are shoveling through a mental fog.
It is unequivocally the primary psychological hurdle of the move. Schaefer explicitly emphasizes a specific stress test for potential buyers. He tells them point blank, do not visit Bellingham in July.
Why not July?
Because summer in Bellingham sells itself. It's practically a resort. If you want to know if you can actually survive there, you must book your scouting trip in November or February. You need to walk around the historic Fairhaven District in a steady 40-degree January drizzle.
Sounds delightful.
Well, that's the test. If you can handle that, if you can find the coziness in that fog sitting heavy on the bay rather than feeling oppressed by it, then you are ready to make the move.
And he mentions practical physical mitigations for this, right? This isn't just a mindset shift of, you know, toughing it out.
Not at all. The lack of sunlight has literal physiological consequences. The human body synthesizes vitamin D through direct exposure to sunlight, and chronic deficiency can lead to seasonal affective disorder, lethargy, and immune issues.
So what do you do?
The guide treats vitamin D supplements and full-spectrum light therapy lamps as mandatory Pacific Northwest infrastructure. They are not holistic fads. They are necessary biological adaptations to the climate. You literally turn on the happy lamp while you drink your morning coffee just to trick your brain into waking up.
But the payoff for enduring that marathon of gray, the summers.
Oh, the summers are the reward for your endurance. July and August average a dry, pristine 72 degrees. And because of Bellingham's far northern latitude, it's incredibly close to the Canadian border, you get incredibly long daylight hours in the summer.
So it stays light out super late.
The sun stays up late into the evening. It's so persistently mild that the vast majority of homes in Bellingham don't even have central air conditioning installed. The mechanism just isn't required.
That's wild. Okay, so assuming you've passed the stress test, you've run the gauntlet of the winter gray, you've got your light therapy lamp set up, how does your day-to-day life actually change? We've talked about the math. We've talked about the barometric pressure. But what are you gaining in time and what are you losing in culture?
Right. The lifestyle shift.
I want to talk about that lifestyle shift and specifically what the guide calls the friction factor.
Friction is the absolute perfect descriptor because it's the invisible force that defines dense urban living in a massive metro area like Chicago.
Oh yeah, you feel it every day.
Friction is sitting in the 5 p.m. bumper-to-bumper crawl on the Kennedy Expressway, watching your life tick away. Friction is circling a block for 20 minutes, only to pay $40 to park your car in a downtown garage. Friction is the absolute necessity of building a 45-minute buffer into every single plan you make, simply to account for traffic, transit delays, or parking hunts. It elevates your baseline cortisol levels permanently.
And the guide states that getting completely across the city of Bellingham takes, what, 10 to 15 minutes tops? On the worst traffic day of the year. I'm just marveling at the mechanism of that.
It's true.
Having a 15-minute max commute must completely alter a person's central nervous system. You're reclaiming hours of your life every single week that were previously lost to asphalt.
And what you do with that reclaimed time changes how you interact with your environment. Because you have those hours back, and because of the physical geography of the region, outdoor access is unmatched. The guide maps it out pretty clearly.
Give me the breakdown.
You are 15 minutes from mountain biking the Galbraith Mountain Trails or hiking the Chuckanut Ridge. You are 20 minutes from launching a paddleboard in Bellingham Bay. You are 25 minutes from swimming in the fresh water of Lake Whatcom. And you are just 90 minutes from the Mount Baker ski area, which, mathematically, frequently receives the highest seasonal snowfall totals on planet Earth.
That's unbelievable access. But you are sacrificing something massive for all this pristine nature. We have to be real here. You are trading the world's best deep dish pizza for a kayak and a craft beer.
It is a profound, undeniable culinary loss.
It hurts just thinking about it.
The guide is brutally honest on this point. Bellingham, with a population hovering around 95,000, simply cannot compete with the sheer scale and diversity of Chicago's food scene. You're losing the deep dish. You're losing the authentic, dripping Italian beef sandwiches.
The taquerias.
You are losing the incredible neighborhood taquerias, the late-night diners, the sheer density of Michelin-starred fine dining.
Yeah.
It is gone.
So what replaces it? I mean, you can't just eat pine cones.
The trade-off is a pivot to hyper-local Pacific Northwest fare. You gain access to incredibly fresh seafood. We're talking salmon, oysters, Dungeness crab pulled right out of the bay. You integrating to an exceptional local coffee roaster culture. And you adopt a very serious competitive craft beer culture.
Yeah, that softens the blow a bit.
The guide specifically highlights beloved local institutions like Kulshan Brewing, Boundary Bay, and Aslin. And if you drive a bit north to the town of Linden, you get access to these amazing, historic Dutch bakeries. So it's not that the food is bad, it's just a completely different culinary vocabulary.
And it's not just the food that's different, it's the social fabric, the people themselves. The guide spends significant time discussing the psychological phenomenon known as the Seattle Freeze.
Yeah, yes, the Seattle Freeze. It's a well-documented sociological phenomenon where Pacific Northwest locals are perfectly polite, highly conflict-averse, but decidedly not warm or inviting to newcomers.
So they aren't mean, they're just distant.
Exactly. They will give you directions, but they won't invite you to dinner. The guide notes that this freeze is noticeably gentler in a smaller city like Bellingham compared to Seattle, but it is still a massive cultural shock for anyone arriving from the Midwest. Chicagoans are famously warm, instantly talkative, and intensely neighborly.
Schaefer warns that it takes real, concerted effort. It takes about 6 months of deliberate action, joining an intramural sports league, volunteering, or becoming a stubborn regular at a local coffee spot to finally break the ice and build a genuine social circle.
Right. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it's fascinating how physical geography actually dictates community behavior and social mechanics. Think about how friendships form in Chicago. People bond over the shared trauma and density of the city.
Yeah, you help your neighbor dig their sedan out of a frozen snowbank on a Tuesday morning, and you are instantly bonded.
Exactly. You are forced together by the architecture and the weather. In Bellingham, the community organizes almost entirely around outdoor pursuits. The mountains, the bay, the forest. The physical geography scatters people out into nature on the weekends, rather than compressing them into neighborhood pubs. It completely changes the mechanical process of how you acquire a friend.
Okay, so let's say you've accepted all of this. You've accepted the lack of Italian beef. You've bought a vitamin D lamp for the clouds. You've accepted that your neighbors might take 6 months to learn your name. You are ready to go.
Let's do it.
How do you actually pull off this 2,100-mile relocation without ruining your career or accidentally buying a house with a collapsing foundation? Let's get into logistical mechanics. Remote buying, and remote working.
The remote work angle isn't just a perk. It is the fundamental engine that makes this entire relocation pipeline possible.
Really? Is the local job market that bad?
Well, the local non-remote job market in Bellingham is fairly limited. The local economy is mostly anchored by the Peace Health Hospital System, Western Washington University, retail, and maritime trades. The salary ceilings for local jobs are significantly lower than what a corporate professional earns in Chicago.
Got it.
Therefore, the vast majority of these relocations are facilitated by keeping a Chicago-based salary, but doing the work remotely or in a hybrid capacity from Washington.
And there is a massive time zone hack here that I find so incredibly interesting. Bellingham's on Pacific time. Chicago is Central time. So there's a permanent 2-hour difference.
Exactly. Let's look at the mechanics of your new workday. If you are working a standard 9-to-5 Central Standard Time job from your home office in Bellingham, your new working hours are 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific time.
7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Yes, getting on a Zoom call at 7 a.m. is an early start, but you hard log off at 3 p.m.
Right.
In the summer, the sun doesn't set until nearly 10 p.m.
You have hours of daylight left.
You have these incredibly long daylight-filled afternoons to go hiking, to take the kayak out on the bay, to pick up your kids from school and actually spend the afternoon with them. It completely flips the standard American work-life balance on its head.
It's a massive quality of life upgrade. But what if you have to travel back to Chicago, say, for mandatory quarterly meetings or client visits? This brings up the aviation logistics, which require careful planning.
You just fly out of Bellingham?
You essentially have two choices. Bellingham International, or BLI, is a fantastic but very small regional airport. It's incredibly convenient if you want to hop down to Las Vegas or California on a budget carrier like Allegiant or Alaska Airlines. But for getting to Chicago efficiently, it simply doesn't work. You'd be looking at multiple layovers.
Right, which means you have to rely on SeaTac.
Yes. SeaTac, or Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. It's located about 90 miles south of Bellingham. You have to drive down Interstate 5, which usually takes 1.5 to 2 hours, depending on Seattle traffic.
Yeah.
From SeaTac, you catch a 4-hour and 40-minute nonstop flight directly into O'Hare.
Okay, so the commute back to the office is very manageable, but it requires a dedicated travel day. You aren't just hopping on the CTA Blue Line anymore.
Exactly. It's an event.
But the real logistical hurdle, specific thing in this guide that gives me absolute sheer terror, is the idea of buying a $650,000 piece of real estate site unseen.
It's wild, isn't it?
The guide states that about a third of Schaffer's Chicago clients write a binding contract, having only physically seen the house once, and some never set foot in it at all until moving day. They do the entire thing over FaceTime. It's like getting married based on a Zoom call. How does anyone have the stomach to risk hundreds of thousands of dollars on a smartphone video feed?
It sounds incredibly reckless, bordering on insane, until you understand the exact workflow and the specific legal protections built into Washington state real estate contracts. It is a highly calculated, process-driven risk, not a blind leap of faith. The mechanism of the purchase protects the remote buyer.
Okay, walk me through this workflow. How do you buy a house over FaceTime safely?
The first step is calibration. The broker conducts a rigorous 30-minute video call to establish exact budgets, preferred neighborhoods, and absolute deal breakers. Then the buyer gets set up on the Northwest Multiple Listing Service, or NWMLS.
Which is like Zillow, but better.
Much better. The NWMLS is the centralized database for all regional real estate data. It's much more comprehensive and timely than third-party sites like Zillow. When a property hits the NWMLS that matches the criteria, the broker immediately goes to the house and conducts a highly critical FaceTime walkthrough.
Critical being the key word there.
Exactly. The guide emphasizes that a good relocation broker isn't just pointing the camera at the nice granite countertops. They are acting as the buyer's physical proxy. They go up into the attics, they check the foundation walls in the crawl space, they sniff for dampness, and they actively narrate all the hidden flaws that the listing photos deliberately omit.
So they are actively trying to talk you out of bad houses. And then what? Does the buyer fly in?
Typically, yes. Once a few viable candidates are found, the buyer executes a highly compressed 2-to-3-day fly-in, usually arriving Thursday and leaving Sunday, to view 6 to 8 shortlisted homes in person. But even if they make an offer remotely, the real safety net is the structure of the Washington state contract itself.
How so? Because in Illinois, our safety net is the attorney review period. After you sign a contract, your lawyer has a few days to review it, argue terms, or kill the deal if something is fundamentally wrong.
Right, and this is a massive procedural shift. Illinois uses an attorney review system, which Washington does not use at all. In Washington, real estate agents draft the contracts using standardized state forms, and the transaction is handled by an escrow company.
So no lawyers involved in the actual contract drafting?
Usually no. When you make an offer in Washington, you put down 1% to 3% of the purchase price in earnest money almost immediately. On a $650,000 house, that means you are depositing $6,500 to $19,500 held in an escrow account.
That's a massive amount of liquid cash to lose if the Zoom call lied to you and the house smells like cat urine when you finally arrive.
But the mechanism of the contract ensures you don't lose it because of the inspection contingency. In Washington, the standard contract gives the buyer a 10-day inspection period. During that window, you hire an independent licensed inspector.
And if they find something bad?
If that inspector uncovers issues, black mold, a failing roof, structural settling, and you as the buyer do not accept the physical condition of the property, you can unilaterally back out of the contract. The escrow company returns your entire earnest money deposit, no questions asked.
Wow, that completely changes the risk profile.
It does. The contract legally protects the buyer's right to verify the physical reality of the home after the offer is accepted.
And what about closing? Do you have to fly back to sign the paperwork?
Not at all. Remote closing is completely standard practice now. All the initial documents are handled via DocuSign. For the final closing documents that require wet signatures and notarization, a mobile notary will literally drive to your home or office in the Chicago area.
They come right to you.
Yep. You sign at your kitchen table, they overnight the documents back to the Washington escrow company, and the house is yours. To manage the financial timing, since it's tricky to sell in Illinois and buy in Washington simultaneously, many buyers utilize bridge loans or home equity lines of credit, commonly known as ALOCs.
How does the EELOC strategy work?
A HELOC allows you to borrow against the equity of your currently unsold Chicago home, essentially using it as a massive credit card to provide the cash needed to close the Bellingham purchase. Once the Chicago home sells a month later, the HELOC is instantly paid off.
Okay, let's talk about the physical move itself. You sign the DocuSign, the mobile notary has left, the HELOC is paid off. How much does it actually cost to move your entire physical life 2,100 miles?
The logistics of the move dictate the price. A traditional full-service interstate move where a company packs your boxes, loads a semi-truck, drives across the country, and unloads will run anywhere between $8,000 and $20,000, depending heavily on the cubic volume of your belongings.
That's quite a range.
It is. If you want a more budget-friendly option, container moves like PODS or U-Pack are very popular. You pack the container yourself, and they handle the freight transport. That costs between $4,000 and $9,000 with a 1 to 2 week transit time.
And the car.
Well, most relocating families don't want to endure a grueling 3-day drive across the plains and the Rockies, so they ship their cars on an open transport carrier, which adds roughly $1,000 to $1,700 per vehicle.
Okay, so the moving truck has arrived, the car's been unloaded. Where are they actually dropping off your boxes? I want to translate Chicago geography into Bellingham geography. If I know what neighborhood I like in Illinois, where do I belong in Washington? We're talking landing pads, neighborhoods, and schools.
This is where the relocation guide transcends being a mere financial spreadsheet and acts as a cultural translator, because Bellingham isn't a monolith. It has distinct microcultures. Let's start with Fairhaven.
What's Fairhaven like?
Home prices here are at a premium, roughly $700,000 to over $1.1 million. Fairhaven is the historic South End village of the city. It features beautiful Victorian brick architecture, independent bookstores, cobblestone accents, and it is incredibly walkable, sitting right next to the ferry terminal that goes up to Alaska.
And the guide says this is the perfect landing pad for buyers leaving places like Lincoln Park, Andersonville, or Oak Park. If you want historic charm, density, and character over raw square footage, this is your spot.
Exactly. It appeals to the urbanist. Next is the Edgemoor neighborhood, located in southwest Bellingham. Prices are similarly high, $700,000 to $1.1 million. But the vibe is entirely different.
How so?
This area is characterized by mid-century architecture, sprawling large lots, mature evergreen trees, and profound quiet. The guide maps this directly to transplants coming from the wealthy, secluded enclaves of the North Shore or certain parts of DuPage County. It's for people who want space, privacy, and scenic calm.
What about the broader suburbs? Where do the folks leaving the massive subdivisions of Naperville go?
They gravitate toward Barkley, situated in Northeast Bellingham. Prices here are more moderate, generally $550,000 to $750,000. It has a distinctly traditional suburban feel.
Like cul-de-sacs and strip malls?
You'll find newer 1990s and 2000s builds, wide streets, attached two-car garages, and it's very close to the Barkley Village Commercial Center, which has grocery stores, a movie theater, and restaurants. Walking through Barkley feels very familiar to families leaving Naperville, Schaumburg, or Arlington Heights. It offers that highly functional, family-oriented infrastructure.
And if you want to be near the energy of the university?
That would be the Seahome neighborhood. It's situated right near the Western Washington University campus. Prices range from $580,000 to $750,000. It's highly walkable, very bikeable, and excellent for younger professionals or young families who want a vibrant city-adjacent feel, but perhaps can't quite afford the massive premium required to buy into Fairhaven.
And is there anything for, like, first-time buyers?
Finally, there's South Hill, priced between $500,000 and $700,000. It's close to Whatcom Falls Park, has excellent trail access, good transit connections, and serves as a very practical, accessible entry point into the Bellingham market for first-time or budget-conscious buyers.
So what does this all mean? Essentially, Bellingham offers these miniature, hyper-condensed, nature-adjacent versions of Chicago's incredibly varied urban and suburban rings. Whether you want the historic brick charm of Lincoln Park or the quiet cul-de-sacs of Schaumburg, there's a specific micro-neighborhood designed to catch you.
But if we are talking about families, we absolutely have to address the schools because educational quality is frequently the primary driver for relocation decisions.
Right. If you're coming from the highly competitive, highly ranked school districts of the Illinois suburbs, places like New Trier or Naperville Central, what kind of academic environment are you walking into?
Bellingham Public Schools serve about 11,000 students across the district. The fundamental difference a Chicago family will notice isn't necessarily a drop in educational quality, but a massive structural shift in educational philosophy.
How so? What is the actual mechanism of a Bellingham classroom compared to a Chicago suburb?
Illinois districts, particularly the competitive suburban schools and the selective enrollment city schools in Chicago, can be incredibly intensive regarding standardized testing. Success is often measured by metrics, test scores, and rigid academic tracking.
That's a pressure cooker.
Right. Bellingham's educational culture focuses heavily on outdoor and project-based learning. Project-based learning is a teaching method where students gain knowledge by actively investigating complex questions or challenges over an extended period.
So less rote memorization.
Exactly. So rather than memorizing a textbook for a multiple choice test, a fifth grade class might spend 3 weeks testing the water quality of a local creek to understand environmental science. They do offer traditional AP and IB programs for high achievers, but the overall district culture deliberately leans away from test anxiety and leans heavily toward arts, environmental inquiry, and holistic student well-being.
And what if that's just too, I don't know, alternative for some parents?
Well, additionally, if a family wants a more conservative, traditional structure, the county option of Linden offers a school district rooted in a much more traditional Dutch heritage environment.
And for higher education? Western Washington University is sitting right there in town.
Yes, and this loops perfectly back to our initial financial arithmetic. Once your family establishes physical residency in Washington for 12 continuous months, your children qualify for Washington in-state tuition at universities like WWU or the University of Washington in Seattle.
Oh, it's huge.
When you compare those in-state tuition costs against Illinois in-state options, especially considering that you have no state income tax draining your college savings fund every single year, the financial mechanics of putting a kid through college in Washington are incredibly favorable.
This raises an important question, though, about what families actually want from their educational systems and fundamentally from their communities. Shifting a child from a high-pressure, test-driven environment where success is defined by a GPA to an inquiry-based, outdoor-heavy curriculum where success might be defined by understanding local ecology is a massive cultural recalibration for both the parents and the children.
It absolutely is. It asks you to pause and redefine what success actually looks like for your family's daily life. Are you optimizing for prestige or are you optimizing for mental health and curiosity?
Wow. Okay, we have covered an incredible amount of ground today. Let's do a rapid-fire recap of the entire equation. If you execute this move, you are trading a 4.95% state income tax, a volatile 2+% property tax, and 37 inches of freezing snow and polar vortexes.
Don't forget the humidity.
Right, and the humidity. You're trading all of that for zero state income tax, predictable half property taxes, 230 days of misty gray clouds, and a 15-minute commute to some of the most stunning mountains and waterways on Earth.
And, tragically, you are trading the world's greatest deep dish pizza for fresh-caught salmon.
That too. A heartbreaking but necessary sacrifice. But seriously, if you are listening to this deep dive right now, and you are sitting somewhere in Cook County, dreading the impending arrival of the next reassessment envelope, or feeling your bones ache at the thought of the upcoming November freeze, the math proves you aren't crazy for wanting out. Your late-night Zillow surfing isn't just idle daydreaming. It is a highly logical, mathematically sound, defensively brilliant financial play.
It is the ultimate strategic spreadsheet decision. You are reclaiming your capital and your time. But if I may, I'd like to leave you with one final, slightly more philosophical thought to consider before you call the moving company.
Please do.
We have spent the last hour meticulously dissecting spreadsheets, tax codes, RE key percentages, escrow contingencies, and weather apps dictating where a person chooses to plant their flag. We've defined this entire cross-country relocation as a mathematical optimization problem. But when a community like these specific Bellingham Landing Pad neighborhoods becomes increasingly populated by people who all systematically calculated their way there specifically to optimize their finances and their lifestyle metrics, how does that alter the fundamental soul of that neighborhood?
Oh, wow. That is a heavy question.
Contrast that optimized neighborhood with a city like Chicago. In Chicago, so many people stay, not because the spreadsheet tells them it's a good deal, because it clearly isn't, but out of a stubborn generational pride. They stay out of a deep, sometimes entirely irrational love for the grit, the history, and the culture of the city.
That's very true.
If a town is filled entirely with financial optimizers who move there for a tax break, does it lose a certain kind of deep, resilient cultural anchor? What is the actual unquantifiable formula for home? Is it merely the absence of an income tax, or is it the shared irrational endurance of digging your neighbor out of a winter storm?
That is exactly what I'll be thinking about the next time I sit on my couch, feeling that perfect lake breeze and staring at that heavy envelope from the assessor's office sitting on the kitchen counter. Thank you all so much for joining us on this deep dive into the arithmetic of leaving. We'll catch you on the next one.